Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay DeMeritt. Oh, yes. Luther Blissett. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational. And it's there by Jenkins. Delay. Joao Petro again. You believe it?
Welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name's Tom Burdell, and yes, you've guessed it, there's no Matt today. He's away with, possibly with James Morris, somewhere where there's no internet, but I am joined by the always excellent Jordan Weimer, and we'll begin by looking back on that Boxing Day massacre against the Rocking Robins.
But we started to see some cohesion, some structure to the team, offensively and defensively. This one, I think, was the first time we were kind of showing a little bit of a different look by a team. You know, we're at home, a little bit of an onus there, obviously, on us, especially against a team that are, it's not like he's struggling, they're eighth, they're doing well, but, you know, a team that, you know, had a poor start to the year in some respects, and you'd expect us to be able to be confident at home that we can start to control the game and kind of look to be a little bit more dominant. But, you know, Bristol were smart in the way they played us. They had done their homework, clearly. And I'd say, you know, the performance on the pitch, there was some individual errors. Didn't go according to plan in some places, but also I think from the sideline, we were also outplayed as well.
Mm. Let's talk about the fact they've done their homework. I think that was said by a lot of people on Twitter and what have you. What was it that you saw that kind of indicated that? Where was it that they had real joy on the day?
Well, I think, you know, I think the press, their pressure, their closing down, their timing was really good. You know, we turned the ball over a lot. I think they did a good job of assessing our strong points. You know, you look at the kind of look over the last, well, I mean, they could say the whole season, but especially the last five or so games, the left-hand side, that kind of trio of Lewis, Semmer and Kone kind of drifting over there has been very effective for us. And they did a great job of shutting that down. They're really disciplined in their timing of their press. They were able to make it uncomfortable for us and force us to play in areas we're not particularly adept at. You know, we tried to get around it sometimes, and obviously we paid the price in others where we weren't able to, and we did turn the ball over quite a lot. And you know, when they did have the ball, they were quite confident. You know, they moved it around quite nicely, and they were happy to be in control of the football. And I'd say for large parts of the game, we looked a little bit lost and just kind of didn't know how to react to Bristol. It just felt like one of those games where the main preparation is on continuing your style of play, and not too much have gone into necessarily adapting to what Bristol City were going to offer. But yeah, really good performance from them, and I thought it was quite unfortunate that we had to witness that on Boxing Day.
Perhaps it was written in the stars. Bristol City have lost their last five away Boxing Day games. Their last away Boxing Day win at Vicarage Road in 2008, which I can remember going
Marvellous.
To. And being pretty unimpressed at that one too. They seem to have a lot of joy. You mentioned obviously the left-hand side there and Lewis, Semmer and Kone. They seem to have a lot of joy down the flanks in general. It wasn't a good day for our fullbacks, and obviously both of them, the starters, Ryan Andrews and Jamal Lewis, came off. How worried are we about that?
Yeah, I mean, Andrews was apparently tactical. He didn't have a great game, did he? Cameron Pring kind of had him had his number all game, and I thought their use of their left-hand side was very good.
Yeah,
and the
right
side, Mark Sykes. Mete was dangerous, and Pring offered that really nice kind of natural width down the left. You know, they just looked really well coached and like a team that were able to kind of utilize their strong points. And you point out there Lewis and Andrews, obviously, you know, not a great performance from Andrews, but the more worrying thing is the injury to Lewis. You know, he came off relatively comfortably. He wasn't, you know, he didn't have two physios either side of him kind of hopping off the pitch. His hamstring injury, I think he's going to miss a couple games probably. I think if you're coming off with a hamstring injury in a game, you're most likely not going to be in a situation where you feel ready to start a game in just a few days' time. So I think you can definitely rule him out, which is a big concern because that left side is difficult for us. I think what we're most likely going to see is probably how we ended up. Ken Semmer down to left back and go from there. I think that's the natural kind of progression there. I don't think we're going to see Morris. He's not really been around the squad, even though we do seem to have, Valerius seems to have kind of favoured a little bit of rotation, or at least kind of trying to where he can, you know, even the likes of Tom Delibashiru in for Andrews in the last game. So, you know, Morris hasn't been around at all. I would expect that Ken Semmer's the one to deputise.
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed to me that we obviously struggled throughout in the wide areas, as I said, but particularly once Semmer moved back there, the goal arrives, a kind of key moment where essentially Semmer's out of position and we're kind of caught at sixes and sevens. How confident are we about Semmer at left back if we have to do it for, you know, a few weeks? He's done it before, obviously, and he never lets anyone down, as we know, but it does have an impact on everything, I think, doesn't it? Because he has linked up so well with Jamal Lewis down that left-hand side, having two natural left-footers, and that will change.
Yeah, no, I really started to enjoy kind of Lewis's ability to operate in that left-hand side. I think he works quite well with Hoot as well. But he just knows, I think his timing of the runs, you know, whether it be underlapping or kind of dropping into that inverted position, I think he's quite good at it. I think maybe it goes a little bit under the radar how useful he is there because he plays as such a direct player like Ken Semmer, who's capable of getting his head down, outpowering the fullback and getting a cross in. You know, sometimes Lewis's performances are not quite as, maybe not capitalised on the way they could be in terms of that link-up, as effective as that left side has been. So it is a bit of a shame having Ken drop in there. You know, the thing I always worry about Ken is positioning can be an issue. He can get, you know, dragged a little high sometimes, and it's the free kicks around the edge of the box. And I think that's one to keep an eye on for the next game. The free kicks around the edge of the box when Ken Semmer on that left is always a problem for us when he plays in the wing back position or at left back as well. And that's not great for me. Also, don't love, you know, we talk about Wesley Hoot as a defender. Oftentimes, when we talk about negatives in him, it can be an individual mistake, but it can also be that stiffness in the box or around the box, you know, getting turned. And he has to kind of play against that winger. If that winger drifts inside and he's on him, that's when I'm a little bit concerned. And, you know, losing that more traditional left back and having someone fill in there, I'm a little bit worried about Wesley Hoot being a bit more exposed in this one too. So I think there are two kind of points on that position to keep an eye on. But, you know, if you want to talk about positives, then you'd expect Martins to come in and see that left-hand side as it finished, as I said. And I think, you know, if Ken's able to get forward, which you expect him to do on occasion, you know, you might, I think we'll maybe see a little bit less of that inversion, but allow him to get on that outside, whip the ball in and allow Martins to kind of drift in that right-hand side. So it could be effective in offensive plays, but it might be a little bit chaotic at times. What about you? Are you feeling confident on the Semmer drop back?
Yeah, it's not my favourite position for him, obviously. I think the positioning, as you said, is the one, isn't it? Because, and we'll touch upon this as going to be my next point about the kind of goals we conceded yesterday. It is a kind of concern with him, I think. And it's understandable, right? He's, you know, you'd never consider him a conventional left back. You may be at a push, get away with him being a left wing back, but with that extra bit of protection inside there. But it's not his position. And I do think we've really come to appreciate the value of him further forward this season, having that left footer on the left-hand side, to have the variety in the play of someone who goes outside and someone who goes inside on the opposing flank. And you would reasonably assume if Semmer's the one to go to left back, then it'll be Mateus Martins who comes in on the left for the Stoke game. And we know, as good as he is, that he's very predictable in that sense, that he goes inside. So you kind of lack width there. So I think that makes us a little bit easier to play against as well, doesn't it? which is a concern that might not be immediately apparent. The goals we conceded, touched upon the job that Bristol City did, and I think there are a lot of people giving Liam Manning credit for the way he set them up and so on, and kind of out-coached Ismail on the day. The goals we conceded, though, I mean, you know, take your pick. They were all pretty avoidable, pretty poor errors in some part of them. And the timing, of course, of the second just before half-time and the third just after we got a goal back. Was it just an element of bad day at the office, or is there something there that kind of concerns you bigger picture?
I think kind of what we touched on before, you know, I think probably a mixture of both. But I think the lack of all the time it took to adapt to a side who clearly had put in considerable amounts of effort to disrupt what we do well. I guess it's the cliche of plan B and so on, but even just a few adjustments. And to be fair, I think we did make the adjustment. I think we were better the second half. I think we did try to make an adjustment, but the timing, as you mentioned there, that third goal, I think that really was the gut punch, obviously. You know, it doesn't help either to have one just before half time. But I think we should have maybe been a little bit more conscious of the fact that that's how Bristol were going to come and try and play us. They were a bit different to how they normally operate, but you know, you've got to be considering the fact that teams will be looking at the same amount of footage we're looking of at them. They're kind of doing the same to us, and you know, exactly. Doesn't take watching Watford too much to see where their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think they capitalised on that well. You know, they put players under pressure. They closed down a lot of those kind of avenues forward that we're very reliant upon generally. I don't think we did enough with the fullbacks to kind of expose that and kind of create that extra space like we'd like to in kind of the inverted positions. We didn't really consistently stick to it to the point where we were able to play through that press. And that, I think, especially not helped when Andrews didn't have a particularly good game. Obviously, we tried to remedy that quite quickly. But look, I think we have to just be a little bit more on top of these sorts of fixtures. And I think also we kind of can't really get away from the fact that Bristol really just played quite well as well. You know, that's... Yeah. I think on the day, they're not that far from us in terms of ability in certain positions. And as a team, as a collective, I think they're, you know, we're quite a similar, at quite a similar level. And they're probably not, if not, you know, on the day, obviously a bit better. Mm-hmm. So it's, it's a game that felt like a fair loss. But there are lots of things we could be doing better. And I think that comes down to defensively, but also, you know, offensively too. We could be more effective.
So obviously we touched on the enforced change with Jamal Lewis. Andrews came off and wasn't having the best game, and Jake Livermore came off at half time, which meant Kayembe moving back into that kind of holding midfield spot that we've seen him in before. Tom Delibashiru, the man's come on at right back. Both changes, which, with the benefit of hindsight, which is of course 2020, caused us problems. What was your view of kind of Ismail's decision making and how he set the team up and reacted on the day?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of I touched on there with Tom Delibashiru and Andrews, kind of having someone that can maybe be a little bit more comfortable in those central positions to play with the ball. We saw Delibashiru on the ball quite a lot when he came on, and they were trying to kind of find that as an avenue to success, you know, find your way through the lines. You need someone that can play the ball there, and Tom did try and do that. So I understand that. I did really feel at halftime that the change with Livermore was going to happen. We're going to see Kayembe drop in. It felt like something that Ismail was going to do, you know, just because, well, I mean, overall, we weren't able to play through them. We were struggling to kind of find any joy with the 2-8s. You know, that's obviously generally quite a driving force and quite a highlight of this team. We talked about Kone and Kayembe a lot, and they were not involved. They were not active for large spells of that game because simply we weren't able to find them. And it felt like a game we needed that direct presence through the centre. And ball carrying ability in particular, because if you can't pass through them, you can run at them, and that's something which, you know, we had options on the bench with the likes of Shakvatadze and Martins as well that came on, and they give you that ability to drive at them and just kind of disrupt their game plan a little bit. And I think that was a smart move. Obviously, it paid off quite quickly with Georgie there, able to get on and offer something. And we saw in the previous game against Blackburn, when he came on, he was a real game changer in that exact regard. So, you know, you could argue, are you better off just leaving Livermore in that position and not dropping Kayembe in? I think probably Ismail knew the amount of work they're going to have to go through that team now, the amount of effort that's going to have to go into that game to try and drag anything back. And you know, obviously Kayembe's got a little bit more in terms of in the tank there than Livermore, but we saw the same mistakes we talk about with Kayembe. You kind of wish that we had, you know, say an Imran Loser who, you know, whilst neither of them are defensive midfielders, someone that could drop in there and be that defensive wall. We're not looking for that now. We want that springboard from the back. We need that quickness in possession, tempo in possession, and ability on the ball, confidence and timing. And I think that's one thing we've seen with Kayembe in that number six role. He's too slow on the ball. He's not the same player as when he plays further forward. He takes too many touches. He's not confident in his release of the ball. And he looks a completely different player, and it punishes you. We saw it in the build-up to, was it the third goal? You know, losing possession in poor areas, and it cost you. And, you know, this is something we've been talking about for the best part of a year. He's not a defensive midfielder. He's not a number six. You need him more advanced. So whilst I understand it, I think the players he brought on were correct in a lot of ways. I think there's definitely an argument for... you know, exploring something different in that position. And, you know, that probably is something that transfers into the transfer window too, I imagine.
Yeah. Just wonder on that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I was going to mention it a bit later, but you've led me into it nicely. Do we look at doing some business there now? Because I think we've seen over the course of a couple of games at right back that Tom Dele-Bashiru is game, but not going to be able to kind of get up to the level required anytime soon. We don't know how far Ngakia is. And as you said earlier, Morris has been kind of just a non-entity now, really, for months, hasn't he? If Jamal Lewis is out for any length of time, those suddenly feel like the spots where we're lightest. Would those be things that you would like to see us do? And do you think we would do anything in those areas in the next month?
Yeah, I still think we're in a relatively... I imagine our strategy is still going to be relatively opportunistic. I think we'll have areas that we want to address. I'm not sure how aggressive we're going to be in pursuing a particular spot right now. You know, I think we'd like to for sure, but I don't know if it's very hard to say too, because the situation of our backroom staff right now, our kind of recruitment guys and the change in technical director and so on, it's been quite turbulent in that regard. So our transfer policy business and approach is a little bit up in the air. You know, I think if you're Ismail, you look at this team, you're obviously saying that fullbacks, you've got a problem. You know, yesterday with Kemba having to drop in kind of highlights the kind of rigidness of your options in that position too, because, you know, it wasn't a like for like. We try to change kind of a tactical change more than anything. and we weren't able to execute because we just didn't really have the personnel to do so. You know, you've got, as we've talked about already, we've got a talented player like Imran Lusa, and he's sat on the bench. Oh, sorry, sat at home on the couch. You know, he's not able to contribute in a game where you need him. So there's lots of areas we could address. Whether or not we will do is going to be a question, but I think we'll be looking for sure.
Another one is up front. Milutinović did not have his best game again. You tweeted, I think it was at half time, his kind of numbers up to that point, which didn't make particularly impressive reading. And I think the one thing that sticks out for me, Reece Healy in his kind of 25 minutes had two touches in the opposing box. Milutinović had one in 78 minutes, so sort of, you know, more than twice the time. It feels like a bit like Daniel Backman, there's Groundhog Day with this one, just over and over and over and over. But what did we make of his display? Have we learned anything? Has anything changed? Has there been any kind of hint of improvement over the kind of 4 months that he's been here to suggest that he can? Or are we just banging our heads against the wall here?
I mean, look, I'm not going to write the guy off. You know, I'm not going to say he can't do it. But I've not seen a ton of improvement. You know, we kind of feel a little bit stuck in that cycle of he comes off the bench, contributes, scores a goal, earns a start the next week, doesn't contribute, gets hooked. We kind of get in this cycle of, you know, he'll come off the bench and score because that's the time we need him to score. You know, we're obviously being a little bit more aggressive, we're getting the ball in the box a little bit more. He's able to capitalise. But in open general play, just not a contributor. You know, it's not only that he's not really available to receive the ball. You know, he had, I think, 10 passes in the entire game, but he had, as you mentioned there, the touches were low, 19 touches all game, which isn't a great deal for an 80-minute spell. You know, one shot the entire match, kind of a kind of slightly soft header, wasn't it, in the second half? No real That's threat right. posed. But the thing is, it's not, they're kind of the raw surface level numbers, which are obviously important, but you're also looking at, you know, what's he doing to that back line? Is he opening space up for your players? Is he driving forward? Is he making runs? Is he making the day difficult for the two centre backs? Not particularly. No. He's not stretching anything. He's not really finding ways to bring others into play. If you're going to have a striker that's not doing much in build up in possession, then they've got to be working almost as a defensive player, or just at least threatening and causing enough disruption across that back line. But he's quite inactive in that regard too. I also think he's just not physically. I don't think he's a great athlete. I know he's tall, but he doesn't use his size particularly well. I don't see him doing that, and it's a shame. I think that's maybe something. I think that's the kind of area of his game that you could coach. You know, that ability to use his size a little bit more. You know, make him a little bit of a better athlete. Create a little bit more burst from him. Get a little bit more physicality from him because he's relatively slight for his height and so on. I think he could be a little bit more physical and be a little bit more dominant there to at least give us a different avenue. Because right now I'm just seeing a very 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 one dimensional player to the point where. The goals are coming, obviously, he's scored, but I just don't think, I think your overall probability of scoring goes down even though he's scoring goals, you know? I think Rajovic takes away a lot of threat in a game.
That's a good way of looking at it, I think.
There's a problem.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good...
Was it underwhelming for you too?
Oh, yeah, massively, massively. As you say... There's a bit of a philosophical argument, isn't there? That you go, well, on one hand, he's scoring, and he's scoring at a good rate given his minutes because he's in and out of the team and so on and so forth. And, you know, as a striker, you are ultimately reliant on your teammates to create chances to an extent. I think strikers these days, though, are expected to do more than that, aren't they? And as you say, you can get away with it if you're a foil for someone else or you do a really invaluable job that might not get the recognition of scoring goals. You know, you look at Emil Heskey, how fashionable he was kind of late into his career as a striker who really didn't score goals or offer much goal threat, but he was so good to play off in a two. Michael Owen loved playing off him, for example. You know, you look at other strikers who kind of do that defensive work, pressure in the front, whatever it may be, but he just doesn't do any of these things. And I think the kind of sum is that if he doesn't score... then you are effectively carrying a dead weight, aren't you? And he's not going to score every week because he's not that good. So, and we're not that good at creating chances for him. So, Yeah, I think we are a bit like Daniel Backman, destined to kind of have this debate for a while yet, forever and ever, potentially. One other player I wanted to focus on specifically, you mentioned him by name a minute ago, but Georgi Chakvetadze played off the bench against Blackburn and did well, came off the bench here and scored a goal. He's obviously had to be very patient in waiting for his chance. Are we seeing a little bit more consistency from him in terms of end product and how he can help the team?
Yeah, I think his performance at Blackburn especially was really, really one that might go a little bit under the radar, but really positive. And I think he was a real driving force there. That comeback, you know, I think the last time we saw him start, was it Sunderland away? Is that, I'm trying to think, because that was
a that bit... rings a bell, certainly, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, that was a time where the team was playing quite differently, and I think having him kind of introduced a little bit earlier helps, you know, in a slightly different circumstance, but there's a lot of positives he offers, and I think we could definitely get more out of him. We've been using him more centrally. We've not kind of seeing him in the wide position. That is a potential area for him to be of use. I think the problem is our two number eights up until this game have been playing so well, it's hard to really justify bringing him in there. It's a very different type of player. I think you might look at Kone and Kayembe as offering you a bit more of a full package, able to kind of do a little bit more work off the ball and give you a little bit more mobility at times. Not that Chakvetadze isn't fast, but just the ability to drive with power as well, which Kayembe and Kone can both do. You know, looking at Chakvetadze, is a little bit more, a little slighter, a little trickier, a little bit more offensively minded. So, you know, there's maybe a bit more of a time and a place for him. However, I do think when you're looking at games, especially against teams that are going to play you in a less dominant style, you know, you're not going to be that counter-attacking team, you could find ways to get him involved that will benefit the side. And I think his energy, his offensive mind is something we could definitely use a little bit more, especially when we're kind of not really firing in all cylinders. So I think there's a good role for him in this team still. And if I was him, I would be feeling I'm definitely getting closer to kind of getting into that team and earning another start.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think we've said it before, the kind of the way the midfield has changed, people were writing him off a little bit, and there was the story, I think, floating around last week about how he was wanted by another club, and I think, was it Shota Avaladze, who's the Georgia manager? Is it Georgi Kinkladze? Someone. This is a terrible bit of commentary, isn't it? Whoever the Georgia manager is was sort of saying, you know, he needs to leave and play regularly, doesn't he? But I think suddenly, you know, that opportunity's opened up, and we've seen it a few times with a few players this season. I think you can be too quick to write these players off in Ishmael's team, because he's been pretty kind of meritocratic, hasn't he, in the way he picks people, and you know, no one knows that, I guess, more than Imran Luza, who's out in the cold at the moment. It's not Shota Avaladze who's the coach at the moment. It's a bloke I've never heard of, Willy Sanyol, who was obviously Bayern Munich and France fullback. I thought it was Shota Avaladze. It was evidently him commenting on the situation. Go on, you sound like you're about to say something there, or were you not?
No, all good.
Okay, fine. Well, look, I think that's it in terms of Bristol City. Was there anything else you wanted to add on Bristol City, and then we'll just do the briefest touch on Blackburn, or are you set?
No, I think that's good. You know, I think that's kind of the basis. It's just a little bit more of a difficult game for us, and it's one I'm curious to see how we try and address the issues and move on.
Yeah, so Blackburn then, very quickly. I have to admit, I didn't watch this one, and I said to you before we started recording, I was out the entire day on Saturday, saw that we went 1-0 down, missed the goal notifications to say that we'd won it, and when I tuned in to Do Not Scratch Your Eyes Twitter space afterwards, was taken aback to hear how positive people were about what I presumed to be a 1-0 defeat. Lo and behold, we won 2-1, late goals from Mileta Rajovic and Rhys Healy. What were your kind of thoughts after this one, Jordan? Two away wins in a week, both in the Northwest, 7 goals scored. Happy days.
Yeah, and I think it was a disappointing goal that we conceded in that one too, but yeah, it's just the character of the team, you know, just showing a little bit of spirit, a little bit of fight, belief in the ability to come back, you know, players stepping up to the plate, taking on responsibility, which is something we've not seen for a long time. So again, those sorts of games, those performances, the likes of Preston, Blackburn, both comeback games, you know, it gives you a little bit more hope that games like the Bristol one can have less of a hangover going into the Stoke game. There are positives to take from it. You know, as much as there's negatives from the Bristol game, there's positives from the previous two. And I think Blackburn, you know, it's a game we'll look back on and say that we got to learn a little bit about the team, about some of the individuals, and something to do with a little bit about the coach as well. It was a fun game as well, which was a nice way to kick off the Christmas festivities.
Just finally,
also, one last thing I did want to comment on in regards to the Bristol game. They were kind of going back and forth a little bit, but kind of came to my mind. One positive, which also kind of goes into the Blackburn game too. I think we saw a lot more from Yasser Asprilla when he came against Blackburn. Was really, really good. He was a game changer. I think he even won man of the match potentially for his performance after coming off the bench. But I thought yesterday his work rate off the ball was far better. He looks like he's starting to kind of come to terms and get used to the physical side defensively of the game and throw himself about a little bit more. And I thought that was a standout. He looked like a much more mature version of Asprilla in terms of his all-round game. So I thought that was good to see. That was one of the few pluses there. But his effect in the Blackburn game offensively was also very good. And that's something to be positive about, because he's a young player that's been inconsistent, a little bit up and down. But potentially we're starting to see some more consistent form come out of him as well.
Nice. My final question to you had been going to be who kind of impressed against Blackburn that we should know about. So, Asprilla aside, was there anyone else that caught your eye at Ewood Park?
I think that there was plenty of decent performance. I think it was more as a collective. I think Shaqfer Tadzio would be the one I'd say off the bench. I'd go for him, and just in terms of that ability to come on, drive forwards. Obviously, I mentioned Yasser Asprilla there, but that ability to give you that direct transition from defence to attack, be that link. You know, you can drop the ball to him around the centre circle. He can get you to the edge of the box quite consistently. You know, you can commit players, you can open things up, and oftentimes if there's a criticism of our build up play, our football, we can get a little bit stuck in traps. We have to find that space behind teams. You know, you look at thinking about Ken Semmer and Martins on the right in this game. They want to try and get in behind and find that space to isolate, get one on one, use that pace and power. If those avenues are closed off a little bit, someone like Shaqfer Tadzic, who can come on and really drive the ball, be a little bit more tricky and find that space and in more acute angles between players, is really effective. And I thought he was great at doing that for us. So he'd be the one that I'd say shone in that game.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jordan. Well, thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Watford Buzz over Christmas. Hopefully get you away from your in-laws or family or whatever it is for half an hour. We'll be back hopefully after the next couple of games. Of course, Stoke at home before that long trip to Plymouth on New Year's Day. If we don't speak before then, have a fantastic New Year and a happy and healthy 24 to all our listeners and Watford fans, and we shall look forward to speaking again in the new year.
See you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.